Welcome to episode number 609 of Rainer on Leadership. My name is Tom Rainer. I am joined by Sam Rainer, and we're always grateful for Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary, our sponsor. And they have this wonderful mission to glorify the Lord Jesus Christ by equipping students to serve the church and fulfill the Great Commission. They have 40 different degree programs, including the Master of Arts in Church Revitalization that is in partnership with Church Answers and Revitalize Network. It's a 37-hour degree. You can learn more about it at sebts.edu. And if you didn't get that, see the show notes. And they help you lead a church that can go from flatline to flourishing. So you can learn about that as well. At this podcast and at other places where Sam and I write, we talk about turnaround churches, revitalized churches, things that are going on in these churches that have had a reversal from negativity to positive, especially in numerical count, but not just in numerical count. And this time we're going to talk about five of the most significant changes. And basically what we've done for this research is we've looked at the churches that have had a turnaround, and we've asked this question: what is common in most of these churches? And maybe this five is not an exhaustive list, it certainly is not, but these were five of the most common examples of churches that have had turnaround. I think you'll really benefit from this because you're not hearing from either Tom or Sam, in as much as you're hearing from really thousands of churches. I remember the first time I did a major research project on turnaround churches in a book called Breakout Churches, we had a database of 52,333 churches. We've just built on it since then. So this is going to be some fun information because you're going to learn about this as well. Let me also mention, you'll see this in the show notes before I go any further, my book is doing very, very well, and I just want to let you know about it. It's called Anatomy of a Revived Church. You can see that in the show notes. It was released first of the year, and this is an anatomy of churches that have revived, that were on the precipice of death. And so if you want to see some of those churches that were having near-death experience in the sense that they were about to die, but they didn't, it will be good complementary material as well. So you can look at that. Okay, let's get into this because Sam Rainer's not going to say anything if I don't get my mouth shut in a minute and let him talk. What are some of the most significant single changes in turnaround churches? In one of our other podcasts, we talked about Southeastern Seminary's future indicator tool that they make available. And one thing that we said in this, Sam, is if you have a concerted and intentional effort of prayer or corporate prayer, which is getting as many in the church as involved, that is an indicator that your church has a good future, and it's an indicator in turnaround as well. Great conversation we had in another podcast with Chuck Lawless.
Yeah, it was great to hear from him. You know, he's just such an expert on prayer and knows that world and understands the power, the spiritual power of prayer. And it's the foundation. It's the foundation of every ministry. It's the foundation of every revitalization. It's the foundation of every church plant. This is something that is absolutely necessary. And I would say, you know, in terms of, you know, turnaround churches, revitalizing churches, growing churches, it's just as much about the tone and the posture as it is the metrics.
That's good.
You know, this is, and it's even bigger than culture to some degree. I mean, we put a lot of weight on culture and the, you know, organizational culture of the church, which is important. But, you know, what is the tone of your church? What is the posture of your church? Is the posture of your church one of a submission in prayer? And if you have that, if you have even just a small group in your church that is, you know, submitting to the will of God in prayer, the power of that, it's hard to quantify, but it certainly changes the tone of the church. And I would say prayer is one of those key elements to help move a church from perhaps a negative tone to more of a positive tone. And it's hard to measure it. It's very hard to measure it. And it's one of those things you walk into a church and you feel it sometimes. You just know. Either it's there or it's not. You just recognize it kind of intuitively, maybe spiritually. Again, I don't want to be overly mystical, but you can feel it sometimes. You can feel the presence of the Spirit, and that happens through prayer. I would say that this should be priority number one in a lot of church revitalizations, and it needs to happen more. And likely your church, well, expecting your church to turn around without prayer, it's an improper expectation.
Well, that means it's human-centered rather than God-centered. And that's always doomed for failure when you're talking about anything, but particularly church life. You know, when we had Chuck Lawless in our podcast, we talking about Southeastern's tool for future church, we mentioned to one of our favorite prayer warriors, Margaret, and I know that she often listens to our podcast.
Every episode.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I just want to give a shout out to her. You know, I think about the people we remember in pastoral ministry. We remember the negative ones, the bullies, the critics, especially the hypercritics, but we also remember those who were prayerful and encouraging and supportive. And the rest of your life, you'll be talking about Margaret.
Absolutely.
There may be others on your mind that you don't want to talk about, but you won't mention them, but... But you will.
Yeah, they will definitely go unmentioned on the podcast because I want to be nice. But let me tell you, if you're a listener and maybe you're not a church leader, or maybe you're not, you know, on staff or in pastoral sort of a pastoral capacity, and you just enjoy kind of jumping into these conversations and learning about church life, for those who are the encouragers, for those who just keep it real, for those who are there supporting, doing exactly what God wants them to do. You are such a big part of keeping us pastors going.
Yes.
Don't stop. Just, you know, be there. You don't have to be fake. You don't have to give compliments when they're not warranted. None of that. Just be real, be supportive, be encouraging, have that tone, that proper tone. And let me tell you, your pastor, your church leader, they feed off of that in a way that I think is very positive. I know I do.
I totally agree.
Let me just say that if you're a pastor and you have that person in your life, thank them. You know, make sure you give them a hug. Make sure you say thank you.
Or say something in your podcast they listen to.
Yeah, yeah. And if you are that person, keep at it, because it's part of what keeps ministry going in churches. You are a huge part of kingdom work.
Interrupted you.
No, I was just saying, huge part of kingdom work wherever God is doing work.
When I think of some of my favorite church members, names come to mind like Francis Mason, Aline Maxwell, Lillian Anderson. They're the Margarets of the world. They're the ones I do remember some others that are not so fond memories. But these are the ones that every time I think about, I have incredible memories. Let's go to number two. Number two in this is, yes, prayer is foundational, but a pastor-led outward focus, simply said, is hard to see an evangelistic church, a turnaround church, unless the pastor is unless the pastor by example is leading a outward focus too.
Yeah, I'll go so far as to say I've never seen, at least to my knowledge, I've never seen a church that turned around and got revitalized without the pastor playing a role in terms of an outward focus.
And you want to be careful, because that means church members will say it's the pastor's fault, the pastor's supposed to do it. But I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, I do want to be careful about that, because it does take the whole of the church, or at least a good chunk of the church, to do this. But if the pastor doesn't, that's where the issue comes in. You cannot expect your church to turn around. You can't expect your church to do what they're supposed to do if you yourself aren't doing it. That's the lesson.
Yes, exactly.
So while we often put a lot back on the church and back on church members, as we should, let's not forget that the shepherds are still leading the congregation, and the shepherd has to go out in front and show the way. That's one definition of leadership. Go out front, show the way. And yeah, you've got to be evangelistic. You've got to be outwardly focused. You've got to be about your neighbors. And if you're not about your neighbors, then there's a good chance that your church won't be either.
Back in the prehistoric days when I was a pastor, I would anguish over any member leaving our church. I would, when someone said, whether it was for a crazy reason, like I'm not getting fed, like the church is supposed to be a cafeteria for church members, or if it was maybe a more legitimate reason, like, and this is one that was happened several times, hey, since the divorce, it's just tough for me to be in this church with two families that have been on opposite sides of the divorce issue. And so I've seen them go. And so when I see people leave the church, I anguish over it. And I probably did not have a good handling of the emotions when they left. But here's the reality. Sometimes it is best for people to leave. If the more legitimate reason I just gave, but sometimes people can hinder a turnaround.
Yeah, that's certainly the case. We call that necessary or sometimes even blessed subtraction. There are times when it is tough because, you know, I know of cases in the churches where I've served where, hey, my mom and dad are, you know, getting older. I'm a caregiver. I'm going to go with them to their church, you know, during this time. And that could be years even. I know of cases where, you know, my students, you know, that are in my world, they're just not really doing well at this church. We need another church that will help us, you know, with that. And, you know, you always kind of wonder, are they doing the right thing? Is this the right motive? But there are times to move churches. And then there are times when, yeah. And I anguish over every one of them. And, but then there are times when people leave and, you know, it's, you weep with those who weep and then you rejoice when some people leave the church. It's just, it does happen. It's always hard. It should never be your default setting. Of course, as a pastor, you don't just, well, they're difficult, so I want them to leave. That, you know, you don't want that. But at the same time, there are some legitimate reasons for people to leave. And then there are some that just do need to move on.
They're focused on the unholy trinity sometimes of me, myself, and I. You're not meeting my need. And I need this. This is my worship style preference. I don't like this about the building. And sometimes they can just be such a drain on the outward focus of the church. It's really better for them to move on to more of a country club church. Although that's not really good, but at least for the existing church, it is.
Yeah, I want to be careful because the whole goal of anybody who's not doing what they should be doing is reconciliation. You always want reconciliation. But if reconciliation isn't possible or if they're not allowing for that, then there's not a whole lot you can do. But I would say that as people exit, it's always good to know what's going on. I mean, if you have a mass exodus, I mean, that's a problem. So, you know, if you're sitting there cheering as half your church leaves, then that's probably not good either. I mean, these need to be more isolated cases than they are the norm. So, you know, we're not trying to get back down to a holy huddle or back down to to the remnant, as if that's, you know, we're just purifying our church. That's probably not the best attitude either. But yeah, there are times when people do move on, and I would say it can be a drain on the church. But more times than not, I see when people are not in the church where they need to be for whatever reason, whether it's their fault or not, it's a distraction. It ends up being lot of distractions. You end up putting out all these fires. You end up talking with people about issues and conflict instead of focusing back on what we just mentioned, the Great Commission and leading an outward focus. So sometimes a family or two leaving actually enables you to get back to what you are supposed to be doing. And the fruit of that then comes, you know, afterward. But I do want to be careful. We shouldn't just be cheering people out of the church. That's probably not the right attitude either.
The fourth on this is a movement of focus. This goes back to the book Eric Geiger and I wrote, but it's not just about that book. And it's you can really do a few things better than you can do a lot of things. And sometimes good is the enemy of great, and it can become a distraction. And so many times we can be so busy doing good things, we're not doing the great, which is the Great Commission. So a movement of focus is common in these churches. These churches say, we have all of these things we need to do, all these meetings we want to have, all these activities and programs. But sometimes these churches do not have the Great Commission at the heart of what they do. And so a movement of focus can eliminate not necessarily bad things, but not the best things in order for a church to have almost a singular focus, but definitely a focus on the main thing.
Yeah, and I'm going to qualify your definition of focus a little bit here. Because a lot of churches are busy. A lot of churches have a lot of ministries. A lot of churches have a lot of people going in lots of different directions. That's certainly the case of West Bradenton. I don't know that anybody looking from the outside in would say, oh, that's the model of simple church. I don't think that we are. But where we have focused is on the days that we do things. So we have created a rhythm and a pattern into our church that is very important. We, you know, Wednesdays and Sundays is our rhythm. You know, we have our Sunday, Wednesday rhythm. And that's, you know, it's actually a spinoff of the old Three to Thrive model. But for us, it works where we're going to do what we do church-wide on Sundays and Wednesdays. And we try very hard not to schedule stuff on other days, although it does happen from time to time. But those days are very busy days, and it's kind of an all-in day. That's not for every church. I understand that. But our focus is more on a rhythm and a pattern than it is on stripping away programs, if that makes sense.
And for your church, if I understand the clarity of it, since I have my dual membership included at West Bradenton, at your church, Sunday morning is the primary focus. You will do some things on a Sunday night that maybe once a month or once a quarter, but you're not expecting the entire church to come back on
exactly.
Both Sundays.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, if we have a Thursday morning men's group that wants to gather, a Tuesday night women's group, which we have those, no problem at all. I mean, our groups can meet at any time, but it's not something that is pushed upon the whole church. And then the Sunday night things that happen about 10 times a year are for our leaders. It's leadership training. It's leadership updates. It's, you know, cluing leaders into what's happening into the church. So that's just for the leaders. We call those super Sundays, but it's still within our Sunday, Wednesday rhythm. We try hard not all of our committee meetings happen 10 times a year on 10 Sundays, and we work very hard to keep a very tight agenda with all of that. So while yes, we do have some a little more complexity, most of our people know if it's Wednesday or Sunday, there's probably something happening at the church. And if it's Thursday, it's more than likely not something happening. Yeah.
Fifth and finally, a pastoral commitment to stay. We have talked about this ad infinitum, that most turnaround churches will have a pastor who has made it past usually the fifth year, not necessarily just the fifth year, but definitely past the third year and usually the fifth year. And if it's a turnaround, it is not unusual to see that turnaround not even beginning till the third, maybe the fourth or fifth year. Once people begin to say, okay, our pastor, shepherd, leader is here to stay, and we're ready to get on board. And so when you're dealing with turnaround situations, one of the things that you have to recognize right away is turnaround is not going to happen with a series, usually not going to happen with a series of short-term pastors.
Yeah, what you'd mentioned that we talked about this ad infinitum. What is the difference between ad infinitum and ad nauseum?
Ad infinitum goes on and on. Ad nauseum means you're sick of it.
Okay. I should never challenge you on these things.
Yeah.
So that's why you use the phrase. So I would have been inclined to say ad nauseum, but that would imply that our listeners are sick of hearing us. So you said.
Yeah. You don't want to be nauseated.
Right. You said ad infinitum just to imply that we do talk about this a lot, but our listeners may or may not be sick of.
Oh, they may get nauseated, especially when we show humor. One person, and you know who you are. So, yeah.
They've really gotten under your skin. How many times are you going to mention this?
I'm done. One of the things you've told me throughout my ministry career is that I've led by levity.
And yes, so, you have. I've learned from you. Yes, absolutely. I love that about the way that you lead.
And yet we got Amy J on here who said she's heard more about my levity than my time at Lifeway that she observed. Now, I was humorous at Lifeway at times, but it was a serious job, and I sometimes took it too seriously. So,
And Dad, there's a reason you're not a pastor anymore. This whole, you're focused on this one critic. I mean, you can't do that in ministry. Listeners, you can't do that. You can't be like Dad in that way. You just got to let it go.
Look, I'm not focused on him. You know who you are. I'm not focused on him at all.
Because if you focus on this, you won't want to stay. That's there we go. That's the point.
Exactly.
And let me tell you, this one's so hard because the grass always seems like it's greener. It always does. You know, one of your friends will get a ministry position and you'll be a little jealous if you're honest with yourself about that. And, you know, there's always the bigger church and it's hard. It's very hard. And it's sometimes very difficult to discern the will of God even in everything, particularly if your family's not doing as well as you would like in a church or in a location. But I would say you've got to have as your default setting that commitment to stay. If not, you're going to be miserable. So committing to stay until God reveals otherwise is critically important in ministry. And it's going to be crucial to turning or seeing a church turn around.
I hope these five have been helpful to you, the five of the more good examples of changes in turnaround churches. I hope that you have identified, or if you have not, that you can use them. Before we go, I want you to know that the Church Consultation University enrollment period is still open. The cohort will close soon. I'm so excited about those of you who have enrolled and where you'll be certified as a church consultant. And Sam, April 2021st, we got Revitalize 2020 coming up in your church in Bradenton, Florida, with early bird admission ending on February the 4th. And we mentioned this in a previous podcast. Our lead sponsor is the North American Mission Board. As we partner with Idea Network, we're going to have six or seven churches of the year in different categories, churches that most likely have not received recognition.
Oh, I can't wait to be able to recognize and honor churches that just aren't in on people's radar, but who are doing some amazing kingdom work. That's going to be the highlight for me. There's going to be lots of things that are going to be happening at this convention, but man, I'm excited about the awards.
So you see the information there about registering for Revitalize 2020, also for Church Consultation University, and to make the list a little bit longer, the Church of the Year nomination form that is there. Thank you again for being with us at Rainer on Leadership. Let me just mention, subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever your favorite podcasting app is. Just go there, give us a rating and review. I mention that from time to time. It means a lot to us. It means that we have a good listening audience, a healthy listening audience. And as always, I thank Vander Blumen, our sponsor for a decade now. And they've been around a decade. They've been our sponsor for several years. They help churches, but they also help Christian schools, nonprofits, Christian businesses, all value-based businesses. If you're looking for someone to hire, someone to bring on your staff, or a pastor, contact our friends at vanderblumen.com. As always, we thank you for being with Sam and me on Rainer on Leadership, where we will continue to grow healthy churches together.